Blog Talk Radio.
Of me here, you can get a hold of me by emailing sanclementepunk
all one word, at yahoo.com, or you can get a hold of me at San Clemente Punk on my Facebook web page. Let's jump into it now with this is the Cramps with a new kind of kick.
Life is short, filled with stuff. Don't know what for. I ain't had enough. I learned all I know by the age of 9, but I could better myself if I could only.
Okay, that was the Cramps with a new kind of kick. The Cramps, of course, were started back in 1976, kind of as a more of a rock band, and they were actually active until 2009. Although the band split up due to Lux Interior's death. Lux Interior had a sudden aortic dissection, which, those of you that's not in the medical field, it's pretty fucking bad. Apparently, it was sudden and shocking and unexpected, but he died February 4th of 2009. Brian Gregory, who was the guitar from 76 to 80, died in January 10th, 2001, of a heart attack in Anaheim. But they were around for a very, very long time with a lot of different... members. The final lineup, of course, was Lux Interior, Poison Ivy, who was there from beginning to end, as well as Lux Interior was. Harry Drumdini on drums and Sean Yazolt on bass. I don't know how you say it. But, you know, the Cramps appeared on Beverly Hills 90210. They gave a free concert for the patients of the California State Mental Hospital in 78. They had the whole Can Your Pussy Do the Dog, which was a UK singles hit, actually. But, you know, they were a really good band. They were part of the CBGB's kind of punk rock movement and really one of the prime innovators of psychobilly. We're going to move on now to another band that was active between 85 and 89, you know, an older punk band, one of the golden bands. Christ on Parade was founded in 85 by ex-members of Teenage Warning and Treason. The group actually featured Barry Evans, Mike Scott, Noah Landis, and Malcolm Sherwood, and drummer Todd Kramer. They actually lived in the New Method Warehouse in East Bay and played shows with a ton of different bands, Subhumans, Agnostic Front, Circle Jerks, and they actually headlined the first ever show at 924 Gilman. They were a very political band, and this is Christ on Parade with Riding the Flatlands.
Right.
Okay, that was Christ on Parade with Riding the Flatlands. Of course, Christ on Parade broke up, and, you know, there a lot of great bands came out of there. Noah Landis, actually, Doug Kearney joined in 86. Mike Scott left the band, and Doug Kearney joined, and Landis formed Blister, and then later joined Neurosis in the mid-90s, and, of course, Neurosis has been around for a very long time. He's a keyboardist for them. And they actually, Christ on Parade actually reformed and did some touring in, what was it, 2011 in Europe. But Mike Scott joined the Iconochrist, Nicholas Mike Scott joined Iconochrist. Ron Nicholas formed Grinch, and they there are some rumors that they'll be touring this year. Christ on Parade will be touring the U.S. this year, but you know, rumors are like assholes. Everybody's got one. So we're gonna move on now to a Seattle band, the Insurgents. The Insurgents are actually Josh from the Insurgents, especially, is great friends of the show. And they sent us two new tracks from their upcoming release. You can find the Insurgents on their Facebook page. Check that out. You know, they're not the Insurgency, it's just Insurgents. I-N-S-U-R-G-E-N-C-E, Insurgents. They're really good, kind of grind, well, kind of speed, along the lines of DRI, but a lot better. I think a lot more talented than DRI, certainly. But the Insurgents are... They've mixed the final out, and the album should be out very soon. But this is the Insurgents with one of the new ones. This is the first time it's ever been played on radio. This is the Insurgents with National Razor.
The pain, 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 the p
was The Insurgents with National Razor. I really like those guys. Those guys are a thrash band out of Seattle. Josh is a drummer. He's a really good guy. He sent me those tracks, and I'm really, really happy to get him on. They're really good guys. So give them a listen. They're on Facebook. You can check them out. Where else can you find them? They have an Interpol page where you can buy their stuff. I believe they have a band page. I'm not entirely sure on that. But either way, check them out. They're a great band, and I highly recommend them. We're going to move on now to an oi band out of an oi punk rock band out of the East End of London, the Foreskins. Originally, it was Gary Hodges, Hoxton, Tom McCourt, Steve Hammer, or Steve H. on bass, and Gary Hitchcock on drums. That actually formed in 79 and disbanded in 84, although they do have a new lineup that ran between 2007 and 2008. A lot of their songs were very violent, at least dealt with violent things, and, you know, life in the inner city. They were, you know, oi skinheads, the traditional skinheads, not the racist skinheads. But in 2008, Gary Hodges actually brought out the Gary Hodges Foreskins, which they played in Berlin, Allentown, and in Allentown, Pennsylvania. They have not said whether or not they did in 2010 release The Return on Randale Records, but as of yet, they don't have any plans to come to the United States. But this is the Foreskins with Yesterday's Heroes. Okay, that was the Foreskins with Yesterday's Heroes. Up next, we have a band that was described, their album The Mistake was described by punknews.org as take the reckless intensity of Black Flag, the breakneck speed of Minor Threat, and the brilliant musical structure of Early Adolescence. Now throw it all in a pot, set that shit on fire, and let it explode in the blaze of glory. The end result would be The Mistake by little-known band Bullet Treatment. Well, Bullet Treatment's gotten a lot more notice now. Bullet Treatment, of course, was on Basement Records. In 2009, they actually came out with on Fat Chords Records. But Bullet Treatment is just one hell of a great band. They're a hardcore punk band from Los Angeles. They were started by DC, who, and the band has actually featured a lot of different members, including Tim McIlrath of Rise Against, Matt McCutcheon of the Bronx, and Dave Hidalgo from Social D. But it's a great band. I suggest you guys check these guys out. You can also find these guys on Facebook. But this is Bullet Treatment with A Reason for Violence. This is off the Mistake. was The Faith with No Choice. We're going to move on now to Stiff Little Fingers. Stiff Little Fingers are a punk rock band out of Belfast, Northern Ireland. They actually formed in 1977 at the height of what was called the Troubles. They actually started out as Highway Scar, which they were named after a Deep Purple song, and they were just doing basically rock covers. But then Jake Burns went to a Clash, the Clash, to see the Clash in Belfast, and decided on doing the punk. They actually named themselves after a Vibrators, lyrics from a Vibrators song, whereas if it wasn't for your stiff little fingers, no one would know you're dead. But they were, their lyrics were very personal and political, and really were very energetic. The band released the classic Suspect Device and Alternative Ulster as singles, actually, in 1978. And they're actually still around. They broke up in 83, but reformed in 87. They're still doing shows. Currently, the lineup is Jake Burns, Ally McMorty, Steve Grantley, and Ian McCollum. But this is Stiff Little Fingers with Alternative Ulster. They're kind of a hardcore punk thrash band from New York City. They had a very strong cult following, and they released a lot of different records. They're really one of the first hardcore bands from that area to mix with thrash metal, and very much influential in the harder and tougher attitude in the hardcore scene in the 80s. John McGowan and Harley Flanagan are both very accomplished Brazilian jiu-jitsu and boxers. But they've had 5 albums. Although their last one came out in 2000, so they haven't actually put a new album in a long time. Harley is still running around. You know, I talk to him on Facebook every so often. But this is the Cro-Mags with Don't Tread On Me. Okay, that was Dag Nasty with Justification. I love that song by those guys. You know, and a lot of the stuff that they did was very emotionally charged. You know, that whole DC scene was just, you know, those guys came together at just the right time in their lives because they made some great music, in my opinion. We're going to move on now to the Street Dogs. The Street Dogs were formed when Mike McColgan left Dropkick Murphys to actually pursue a job as a firefighter. But in 2002, he left in 98. He was the lead singer of Dropkick Murphys. But he left in 98 and did become a firefighter. But in 2002, he decided he just couldn't stay away from it anymore. And the Street Dogs were formed. The Street Dogs consist of Mike McCullough, John Rio, Marcus Holler, Toby Bean, and Paul Rucker. Johnny Rio, of course, is a legend. He plays bass in the Street Guitars, but he played in Roger Mayer and the Disasters, the Bruisers, the Kickovers, just a ton of great bands from the Boston area. The Bruisers especially, he did a lot with the Bruisers, but the Street Dogs are actually a great band. They will be at the Punk Rock Bowling this year, so if you're in the area, you should definitely go see those guys. But this is Mike McCullough and the boys with Street Dogs, and this is Katie Barred the Door.
Opportunity of God's benefits is past.
That was the Street Dogs with Katie Bar the Door. That was off the Fading American Dream album. We're going to move on to a band out of, well, a great punk rock band out of Davenport, Iowa. I know everybody says Davenport, Iowa. But yeah, The Agrestics. The Agrestics are actually on the Change or Charge Records label, as well as Oblivion Records. They actually formed in 2004 in Davenport, Iowa, and released Welcome to Hell in 2006. The band consists of Tony on guitar, Germs on bass, and Tony J on drums. The Agrestics have done several small tours through the Midwest, although they haven't hit here yet. I would really like to see them here. But this is The Agrestics with Follow Me to Hell.
Follow me, follow me to hell, follow me.
Okay, that was Stukas Over Disneyland by the Dickies. The Dickies, of course, one of the joke punk bands, but they were a very good, very accomplished band. They will be at Punk Rock Bowling this year. And they actually wrote the musical parts to Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which is it was just a horrible movie. But I sat through it and watched it really drunk one night. We're going to move on now to the Vandals. We should be getting a call from Danny Craig here any minute now. And we'll get Danny on for an interview. And some of it will be rehashing, you know, those of you guys that tuned in last week. But I want to get a full interview with these guys. Danny Craig and the boys, I'm huge fans of Killing California. Jerome, I actually contacted Jerome, and he was nice enough to get Danny on with me. But we're going to move on to the Vandals. Joe Escalante is really the only one that stayed constant in this band. The band currently is Dave Quackenbush, Warren Fitzgerald, Joe Escalante, and Josh Fries. They actually started out, the Vandals actually started in 1980. They've been on a ton of Van Warps tour. They record for Kung Fu Records, which was a label that was started actually by Joe Escalante and Warren Fitzgerald of the Vandals. But this is the Vandals, and when we get back, we'll have Danny Craig on. But this is the Vandals with the legend of Pat Brown. We'll be right back. welcome back to San Clemente Punk. We're going to move on now. We got Dave Craig on the phone. He's the lead singer of Killing California. Killing California is a hardcore punk band from Orange County, California. Killing California has been around and playing since 2004, really setting out to wreck the pop punk scene in Orange County, which unfortunately Orange County have been mired in for quite some time. Killing California set out about and writing and playing songs that appeal to punk purists. Killing California had a self-release, two full-lengths, and they have a self-release and two full-lengths on Basement Records to their credit. There is a forthcoming release that is due in June. Please join me in welcoming Danny Craig, lead singer for Killing California. Danny, how are you tonight?
I'm good, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, Danny, could you introduce us to Killing California?
We got Jerome Waitman, guitar, Josh McKendry, guitar, Todd Lake on bass, and Ryan McBriar on drums, and then myself, I do the vocals and guitar as well. So we recently added Josh in this last year, so some songs got three guitars, some songs I set my guitar down and let those guys take it away, and I just do vocals, so it's pretty cool dynamic.
Okay. Now, Danny, you play guitar and sing, which is difficult for a lot of people. Is there anyone in your family that you can point to as your source of talent?
I don't know if I would call it talent. I think I'm better at perseverance than anything. But my dad, I grew up with him playing guitar around me. He was in bands as a kid. And so it definitely rubbed off on me. And then my younger brother was a big inspiration in me getting started. The fact that he, being my younger brother, actually started poking around in bands before I did, and that sort of motivated me to do something that I had always, you know, thought and wanted to do at some point. So there's some music in my family for sure.
Now, how did you find yourself drawn to punk? Was that, you know, was your brother into punk first, and you followed him, or, you know, how did you find yourself?
No, he wasn't into punk first. He just kind of had the nerve to start a band first. I got into punk in seventh grade. I walked into a class and saw a kid that I had never seen before, and he was wearing a 7 Seconds shirt, and he had just come over from England and started going to school, ended up in one of my classes, and just struck up a friendship with him. And I mean, at that early of an age, he already had a vinyl collection, so that was the biggest thing for me at that point. I mean, that was so new to see a kid, you know, that age with all these bands you never heard of and a vinyl collection to boot, was pretty cool. And you know, kind of just it blossomed from there, and that was it, and here we are still today.
Now, how did your family feel about you guys getting into punk?
Ambivalent. I don't think they cared. My parents were split up. I was never a mohawk punk, so to speak. So, I mean, I was more into skateboarding and stuff. So I never, like the whole fashion part, never, I think that's what parents get more freaked out about than anything. But the fact that I was listening to punk rock music, I don't think if they knew, they didn't care. It never really made a difference to them.
All right. Now, this isn't the first band for most of you. Killing California wasn't your first band either, was it?
No, it wasn't. I started out a band in the 90s, mid-90s, called Scumfox with a K and a X. We released two records. Played some shows. Then after that, I was in a band based out of Phoenix, Arizona, called FKR, and did a lot of shows with them. And then in 2003 or so, got the Killing California thing going, 2004.
So were you always based out of Orange County, even when you were playing with the Arizona band?
Yeah, what happened was during Scumfox, I was trying to set up a tour. And back then, you know, before, you know, internet, and, you know, you really had to DIY your contacts, you know what I mean? Like, really, just
right.
It was totally different than it is now. And I reached out to a guy in Phoenix, Jackie Wilson, and he had the scene in Phoenix. He knew it real well, and he booked us some shows out there. Well, the band broke up before we ever got to go out there. And just by chance, he ended up moving to San Clemente, California, and we actually got to meet and became great friends right away. And he had told me about this band that he had just left back in Phoenix called FKR, and they were doing kind of a lot of more metal punk stuff. And he's like, you know, let's go back to Phoenix with me and let's check this out. So yeah, basically we would commute a few times a month, go rehearse, and then we got shows. I'd fly out and he'd fly out, and we would or drive, and it was a neat time. But I definitely don't miss that drive from LA to Phoenix anymore. That's for sure.
That's a long ass drive.
Yeah, it is. It's cool for a few times, and then I'm like, oh my god, I've been doing this for a year every weekend. Like, it's just unreal. Got a lot of Southwest frequent flyers though, so that was cool.
Yeah, you have to take out a loan on your house to afford the gas anymore.
Well, yeah, you couldn't even do it now. Jeez, there's no way you could have afforded to do it. You know,
no.
It was back then, Southwest Airlines had you could fly for $49 each way, and then,
oh, right.
You know, of course, gas was a hell of a lot cheaper than it is now. So it was doable at that time, but no way would I do it now.
Right. Now, how did you guys form Killing California?
Just mutual friends here in town. The FKR thing was sort of a metal punk thing. I kind of wanted to go do a looser rock and roll thing with the original idea behind Killing California. And knew some mutual friends. I got the drummer from Scumfuck. He kept talking about, getting another band going. So brought him in and then had some other friends in town and just kicked around the idea. And we just, started jamming like, all bands do. And it came together and... that was that.
All right, now, how did you come up with the name Killing California?
At the time, I thought, I'm a transplant. I've been in California for 20 plus years, but I've kind of always felt a little out of place. And a lot of people come to California. A lot of people are transplants, and I just thought that. This is one of the most beautiful places on earth. As far as diversity goes, mountains, beaches, deserts. And I thought it was a cool name as far as encroaching on the West Coast, and kind of just that became the name. And we adopted a rattlesnake skull to, kind of symbolize the snake coming back to take the state back. And that's really how the name started out. And how band names are. The meaning almost evolves over time, especially after 8 years. But yeah, that's originally the idea behind it. For me, anyway.
All right. Now, did you kick around any other names before you settled on Killing California?
Well, I mentioned the rattlesnake earlier. We kicked
right.
around the rattlesnake, but there was a band that already had that name. So rather than call a band that, we kind of just made it our mascot, I guess, for lack of a better word. But I don't remember really offhand any other names that I can remember.
I was actually going to bring that up. That it seems like the rattlesnake has become kind of your guys' mascot. The rattlesnake was the first choice, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, who were the first members of Killing California? How did you go about recruiting other members?
The first members, we've had actually a few lineup changes through the years. Jerome and Ryan, who are in the band now, they were in the original lineup. Jerome's on guitar now. Back then, he was on bass, but he is a guitar player. But at that time, he was a guitar player playing bass for us. And Ryan was on drums, and a guy named Eric Crane was on guitar. He was on the Split EP, and then he left the band, and we got another guitar player by the name of Donnie. He's an old punk from Huntington Beach. He stuck around for a while, then he recorded Ropeless with us. Ropeless Romantics was our first self-titled release. Not self-titled, but our first release that we did ourselves. And then he moved on, and so we got Jerome to go what he should have been done all along, was playing guitar, and we recruited Richie Blood to do bass. And he stuck around for a while. And then we got Todd, which is a local guy from here who'd been in a lot of different bands. And he did Bones and Sand and the new record with us. Richie was on Going South. So without being too confusing, that's where we're at now. And then, like I said earlier, we got Josh now, who's our third guitar, and now he's on the new record, No Pentagrams, No Crosses.
Now, how soon after you guys formed before you started playing shows?
Right away. We were fortunate to land a gig with the Distillers and TSOL, like right out of the gate. So I think we started in January, and we were opening for those two bands in, I think, like April. I mean, we maybe had 8 songs set at that point and jumped right into the fire. So that was pretty cool.
Right. Do you think that the fact that, you know, you had all been in other bands and had played, do you think that helped you guys to jump into it so quickly?
Yeah, for sure. Because I had been, you know, in bands for a while before Killing California, and making those contacts is probably the most valuable thing to getting a band off the ground. So it definitely lent a hand to getting us gigs right out of the chute. Actually, the Distillers and TSO gig wasn't even my doing. That was our other guitar player. But yeah, it definitely got us getting the gigs right away, because, you know, as you know, or anyone that's been in a band, the relationships that and the contacts that you make are the hardest and the best things that you kind of got to hold on to, because it really is who you know.
Right. Now, Killing California actually formed in Orange County, California, which is a legendary biosphere of great punk acts in punk history. Was that a difficult thing to live up to, or did you guys ever try and live up to that, or did you guys just say, you know, fuck it, we are who we are, and this is us?
Yeah, it never came into my mind. I don't think the other guys either. You know, never did. You know, what are you going to say? We got to either be like Social Distortion or not. You know what I mean? A lot of bands choose to be, but it was never a thought. We never sat around and decided what we were going to sound like, or that we had to uphold any sort of Orange County tradition, you know, or anything like that. It was just, we kind of just got together and started jamming.
Right. Now, did you always set out to just be this unapologetic, hard-hitting punk band, or was there ever any discussion in going maybe in a thrash or a heavy metal sound?
No. You know, I love metal. I love thrash, but I don't think I can play metal or thrash on guitar. So it was just a natural thing to just, you know, do what we did, you know, kind of a heavy punk rock thing. Not by design. It was kind of just what came naturally, you know. For me, I can't speak for the other guys, but, you know, I think for them as well, because there was no preconceived ideas about what our sound was going to be. It was, you know, a couple marshals and a drum set, you know.
Right.
Gibson's and marshals, I must say.
What's that?
I said Gibson's and marshals, I must say.
Okay. Now, where were some of the first places you guys started playing?
The first place around here, there's a little bar, dive bar called Dungini Saloon, and that definitely every band gets their feet wet there. So that was the definitely the first for really any band that I was in. We all played there. It was sort of a little focal point for the South Orange County scene at the time. So, yeah, it definitely started there.
Okay. Well, Danny, I want to move on into a song by, actually, I can say all of your songs by Killing California. I'm actually a huge fan, are my favorites. But Blaine Bukowski was one of the first ones I heard on the Tale of Orion Orange CD. And that's how
yeah.
I was introduced to you guys. Love this song. Could you tell us a little bit about it before I play it?
I had an idea that it would be cool to write a song, you know, maybe about the authors that influenced you. So I kind of just went down the line, and a 20-year-old kid, Bukowski, was, you know,
right.
That was a tsunami when I found out about him and got into what his whole deal was. And it, you know, he romanticized, you know, drinking alcohol and not being anybody. You know, who says you got to be somebody? And that was a cool idea. And then you know, just down the line, Hemingway. Hunter Thompson, I guess, is the next reference I make. You know, the whole drug and crazy literary politics that he did. And then Henry Miller and On Ice Man, the erotica that they wrote. And then just
right.
getting older, getting into the Dalai Lama and reading up on Buddhism. So it's just sort of a 10-year scope of my favorite writers that I decided to write a song about it. You know, that's it.
Right.
And I guess Blaine Bukowski. You got to blame Bukowski in the alcohol, you know. He was a fire starter.
All right. This is Killing California with Blaine Bukowski. Coming on, I really appreciate it.
Right on, Frank.
Now, I love that song, and you know, you guys remastered that song actually from. So if someone was to buy A Tale of a Rotten Orange and your new album, No Pentagrams, No Crosses, that's a different version of the song, correct?
Yeah, it is. What version? You played the newer version, yeah, I believe?
Yes.
Yeah. It's just the one on Tale of a Rotten Orange was just recorded by our friend, actually, who Josh McKendry, who's in our band. His day job is he's an engineer at a local studio here, and he did that song for us. The song's the same, but you know, just the production values maybe a little different. Chuck from Basement recorded and mixed the newer version, but you know, the structure of the song is essentially the same, but maybe the newer version is a little more dynamic.
Yeah, no, I like either version. A great song. Now, Killing California started in 2004, and in a little over a year, you were releasing a split with the Needles. How did that come about?
The guy in our band, Eric, at the time, he had a surf skate clothing company, and he wanted to sort of give the band at the time and his brand a different, you know, advertising avenue.
Right.
So he decided to use the company to put out a split. And around that time, we had been turned on to the Needles, and they're a great band. And
yeah,
thought, you know, they're on the East Coast, we're on the West Coast. They wanted to come out and do some shows, so let's pair up and do it together. And Eric got some fun together and pretty much just took it upon himself and put the record out.
All right. Now, how was that album received? Was it a limited run, or how did, you know?
Yeah, it was a limited run. I don't know the exact amount he did. I think it was received good, you know. I think it was received good. But, you know, being on the inside, you don't really notice it, but yeah, I think it was a good stepping stone, I guess is the way I would put it, rather than knowing, you know, how well it was received or not. It definitely helped us get our stuff going, for sure.
Right, plus, and, you know, for a band like the Needles, which, you know, they're a legendary band, to come out and really validate what you were doing, that had to feel good in the band.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, at that time, I thought for sure they smoked us every night, you know. But so yeah, definitely to rub elbows with them, do some shows, and you know, have them actually want to be on a split with us was definitely a cool feeling.
Now, who were the influences for Killing California when you formed, and really early on?
At the time, I was into pretty heavily a San Francisco band that's not around anymore called Bottles and Skulls. I think they're a really unique and underrated band. They did, I think, 3 records, and they really influenced some of the stuff that I was into at the time. And I've always had a love for the band Zeke, and that I kind of wanted to go that direction. So those two bands, I wanted that moody sort of creepiness of Bottles and Skulls, but with a more revved up, you know, heavy punk rock and roll vibe of Zeke is what I, you know, was emulating the band after at that time, for sure.
Right, yeah. Bottles and Skulls, I love those guys too, and they're a little known, and really it's a shame. You know,
yeah,
Alpha Booth and Tiny Riot were just incredible.
Yep, yeah, they're a great band. Yeah, unfortunately, they're no longer. We actually, on Going South, we covered their song Underground Girl from the Born in a Blacklight record. And after it came out, we got a message from him saying that he was quite stoked, something to the effect that he felt like king for a day, that someone would cover his song. So, you know, that was pretty cool.
That is, I mean, because a lot of bands, like, there's a band here that was named Brutality that got a cease and desist letter from the old band Brutality that weren't shit, you know. So, I mean, it's nice to have those guys really say, hey, you know, thanks for covering our stuff, instead of sending you a letter saying, quit playing it.
Yeah.
Now, were there any local bands that helped you along the way, or that, you know, that you guys helped along the way early on?
Early on, Small Town, for sure. Even back, going back to the Scumfucks days, they were a local band around here, a step ahead every time, you know. They're a great band. And they definitely were help and inspiration. Smut Peddlers were back then. And there's a lot of just local bands here that, and those are probably the two more well-known that we aligned ourselves with very early on. But there were still, you know, around San Clemente and San Juan and stuff, there were quite a few bands that, you know, too really many to name, and I don't want to leave anybody out. But, you know, I would say there's a stronger scene going back 6-7 years ago than there is now, unfortunately.
Really?
I would say just the way the, you know, like I said, the Doheny, I'm just speaking to just from a South Orange County standpoint. Yeah, we played out L.A., San Diego and that. But at that time, it seemed like the whole around the Doheny Saloon, it was pretty strong. And that sort of waned off the last few years. And it seems like more bands kind of do their own thing, or other bands aren't around anymore. But it's not as tight-knit as it was back then, you know, going back 6-8 years for sure. And even going back, shoot, Scumfuck days, it was even a lot more unified than it is now. But yeah. Definitely those two bands stick out to me, at least in my musical endeavors.
Right. Now, Killing California was starting to build a lot of steam and gather quite a following. You were getting a lot of notice at the time. Was that a bit overwhelming at first?
Well, it was cool just because, you know, doors are open. You know, you can get the better slot on a gig. You know, we got to go to South by Southwest. We got to do an East Coast tour. You know, things that when you're starting out, you're like, man, that would be awesome to do. But, you know, it was never like it's just more about the doors that open. You know, you get, instead of playing first, you're playing, you know, second or third or before the headliner. Or the memory that I have that really hit me is Jack Grisham called me and asked us to play, open a show for them at the Galaxy Theater in Santa Ana. And that was a huge thrill. So that was definitely very cool. And then, you know, things really started to snowball for us for a little while there for a few years. It was cool. That's when, you know, about time Basement came along and formed a relationship with them. And, yeah, we're getting on a lot of good shows at the time. So, yeah, that's the coolest thing about getting noticed is, you know, finally realizing, because every band wants to get a better gig and a better spot, and that's the uphill battle and the constant fight, you know.
Right. Now, in June of 2006, Ropeless Romantic came out. How was that received?
I think real well from a review standpoint, you know, and then that, you know, that got us to form a relationship with Chuck from Basement. So from that standpoint too, you know, I guess the record did what it was supposed to do, get us some good reviews, a little notoriety, and, you know, kind of help us get to the next level, you know, which is, you know, better shows and getting on a label.
Right. Now, at this time, Killing California was playing a lot of shows, and your name was creeping up the flyer to more prominent positions and really up the lineup. How were things in the band at the time?
Oh, geez. We're always a little chaotic. There's always some sort of turmoil surrounding us. When the things really started to move, there was some band member turmoil, and that's why, you know, we did have a few lineup changes there during that period. But at that time as well, the band was doing more than, you know, it had up to that point. But, you know, amongst all that, it's definitely cool to see your, like I was saying earlier, your like you said, your name moving up the flyer, you know, your build, you know, underneath the headliner rather than the first band in tiny letters down near the bottom, you know.
Right. Right. Now, how did the UK Cup Kamikaze broadcast in September of 2006 with No Front Teeth Records, and then again in December of 2006, you contributed four songs to Dance Hall Troops on the same label. How did that happen?
Marco, who runs No Front Teeth, I think is a big fan of the Orange County scene. He was doing stuff with I'm going to bring him up again, Small Town, Smut Peddlers, I think Broken Bottles, a lot of the Hostage bands at that time. Hostage was putting out a lot of stuff. And I think through our association with those bands, he just caught wind of us, and he contacted me one day, and he took Ropeless, which was our own release, and distributed it over there in the UK, and then asked for some tracks to do on the Dance Hall Troops and the Kamikaze broadcast. So I think it was an association with other Orange County bands that he, you know, got onto us and asked us to be a part of his thing, which was definitely cool.
Right. Now, No Front Teeth was also the distributor for Ropeless Romantic. How was that record received in the European markets?
I wish I had an answer for that. I have no idea. I guess that would be a good question for Marco. We've never been to Europe, so, you know, I think as our sound got heavier, we kind of moved out of, you know, maybe Marco's and No Front Teeth comfort zone as far as the kind of bands they like to put out. So I haven't talked to him in a while. So, you know, who knows, really.
Now, following all that, you were signed to Basement Records and put on the Radio Disaster Comp in 2007. And, you know, it had to feel good that a U.S. label with really legendary status took notice of you. Was it after Ropeless Romantic came out? I mean, were they going to your shows? How did Basement approach you guys?
We met them through the company I mentioned before, the Surfskate Company. And I think at the time they had approached the Bronx about an endorsement or something. So Eric, who was in our band at the time, had met Matt. And Matt did a record with Chuck for Chuck's band, Bullet Treatment, sort of a revolving members kind of thing. And when we caught wind of that, we were like, wow, you know, really, really stoked on that record. And there was just a tiny relationship that started between Matt and our buddy Eric, and then Chuck, the owner of Basement, and doing the Bullet Treatment thing. And we had a gig, and we asked Bullet Treatment to come down and play with us. It was a TSOL gig, actually. And Bullet Treatment with Matt singing came down and played the gig. And I think that's where the relationship really started. That was the first time that he saw the band perform live, and then just kind of went on from there.
Okay. Right. Now, there was a lot more spotlight on Killing California at this time when you were signed by Basement. Was the mood better, were you guys really nervous within the band?
No nerves. Lots of go back to turmoil, because the core group of the band at that time, with Jerome and Ryan and I, we were always good. It was, you know, trying to find that fourth member that was gonna, you know, stay with us. We knew at the time, you know, nothing against those guys. We just knew that they weren't in it for the long term, and So that was really the only difficult part dealing with it. But you know, once the basement thing started rolling, it was actually really easy. And the hardest part was just keeping the band together, or having a member that was capable to keep up with the schedule that was going on at the time.
Right. Right. Well, Danny, I want to play another song from Killing California. This is also off of No Pentagrams, No Crosses. Now I'm You. Could you tell us a little about it before we play it?
Now I'm You, I wrote about my best friend who passed away in 2007. That's it. Chuck had us come in and wanted to do a song, for, I believe it was another comp that he was doing. I think it might be, number 10. And, we had that song and didn't have any lyrics. My friend had just passed away and I came back, flew back from his funeral, and the guys went in and cut the song in the studio. Well, I basically listened to it outside the door, and then just penned my feelings about losing my best friend. And the Now I'm You thing is just me, you know, him living inside me, and carrying it on. So yeah, that song holds a lot of weight to me for sure.
Okay, this is another one of my favorites by Killing California. This is Now I'm You.
Those are great words to hear, because it's not It's only aggressive in the heartfelt delivery, you know. It's not no tough guy bullshit, that's for sure.
Right. So is it difficult? I mean, you were just saying that you're worried that you would come across as just being this aggressive, screaming guy that's pissed off the world. Is it difficult? Do you find sometimes that you think you may have stepped over the line?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, honestly, you know, yeah, I think as a performer, a musician, you know, you kind of stick your neck out on the chopping block, and you'd be a liar if you didn't say you were, you know, wondered or fearful of what people thought when they really don't know the real you and, you know, things like that. So for sure, I definitely don't want to come across as some meathead just up there screaming at everybody that's pissed off at the world, because that's not me, you know.
Right.
It's the way I express myself, but I'm definitely, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I could see how somebody would maybe see me as that, but, you know, hopefully you can dig deeper and realize that, but that's really not who I am.
Right. Now, would you guys say that the band is your own worst critics?
For sure. For sure.
Now, this was your second release on Basement Records, and you became label mates with a lot of great acts, and you were gaining a lot more steam. You also put out two more comps, one on Basement Records and another on Motherbox. Now, were you guys writing nonstop pretty much this whole time?
Yeah, at that time we were putting out a lot of music for sure. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, were there a lot of songs that didn't make it onto the album that you guys just, you know, you have a lot of songs written, you couldn't find the spots on the album for?
Yeah, we have a few songs that have never made it to tape yet, for, you know, a myriad of reasons, probably mostly because Chuck didn't like them, but definitely I think every band has those throwaway songs that you just for whatever reason they don't stand up to the material you're putting out, or, you know, someone for whatever reason doesn't like it, and it just never, you know. And some, you know, some songs sound great rehearsing, and then you try and get them on tape, and you can't get them across right, and, you know, you don't want to put something out that you have to make excuses for, as for, you know.
Right. Now, who does most of the writing for the band?
Currently, Jerome does. Like, he wrote 90% of No Pentagrams, No Crosses. I wrote one song, Limbs. Before that, it was probably more 50-50, the Bones and Sand EP, and Going South were probably 50-50, him and I, and then Ropeless, our first one, was I'd say 75% me. So it's definitely evolved. I'm definitely comfortable, and I've let him sort of take over a lot of the guitar writing duties, and I think it's definitely for the better.
Right. Now, there was a bit of trouble when Bones and Sand came out, which was also universally praised by the critics, but there was a bit of trouble with the cover art, correct?
Yeah, you know, wow, how'd you know that?
I do a lot of research.
We kind of left it in the hands of a buddy of ours, a graphic designer buddy of ours, and unbeknownst to us, he kind of plucked it from, you know, a pretty obvious web gallery or whatever, and to our fault, didn't do enough homework on where the image came from, and unfortunately, it's an image that has been used quite a bit. It ended up not being an original piece, which kind of has always given me a, you know, sort of bad feeling about that record. Not the music, but, you know, but fortunately that was actually a limited release, so those are all gone anyway, and, you know.
Yeah. That was my next question, actually, was can we still get that anywhere? Because I'd love to get that album.
You can get it digitally, but I, as far as physical copies, I don't think there's any. I mean, I have one, and I think the original run was only 100, and we were going to do on digipacks, and we were going to do, you know, different colors as we went through them, and the whole artwork thing just kind of spoiled it to really continue, you know, pressing that cover art, and just decided to move on from that, you know.
Right. Now, Killing California continued doing comps as well. I actually first heard you guys on the Tale of a Rotten Orange CD that Troy on Civil sent me, and the songs of Spartan and Blaine Bukowski just absolutely blew me away and, you know, made me a huge fan. How did your inclusion on that comp come about?
Greg from the Fist Pops is the one who put that together. Him and I want to say Mike Maldonado, a local promoter here, and they just gathered up all their, you know, favorite. I think most of the bands are from Orange County, and he included us on it. And I've known Greg from, you know, doing shows with the Piss Pop, so it was a no brainer really. It was that easy.
Okay. Now, how did you guys decide on including a fifth member and you moving exclusively pretty much to singing?
Well, I'm not exclusively singing. I mean, on the 10 tracks on the new record, No Pentagrams, No Crosses, you know, when we performed the songs live, 8 of them, I would be playing guitar, and there's only 2 that I don't. But the way the inclusion of another guitar player is, there's Jerome, left town, basically chased a girl across over to Virginia and basically left the band. So we thought we were done, and we had known Josh from doing the first recordings of Blaine Bukowski, and you know, he had always made it clear that he'd love to jam with us. So after Jerome was gone for a few months, the other guys and I were getting kind of itchy to, you know, do something. So we just hit up Josh, and he came down and just started playing the songs, and we played one show with him, and then and Jerome came back, and so here we were. Of course, Jerome's got to get back in the band, and but you know, we didn't want Josh to leave, and it was cool to add a third guitar in there. He's a great lead player. I can add a lot of dynamic and texture to songs, so we just decided, what the hell, let's try and do this with 3 guitars and, you know, see what happens.
All right. Now, how did you, in June 19th, Killing California has No Pentagrams, No Crosses coming out. I'm greatly anticipating a release. How long did it take you guys to write this, and how did you set about putting everything, you know, all the tracks together? Has it been a real labor of love?
Oh, boy, you could say that again. we laid down we've had the material for quite some time, but as I said earlier, Jerome left the band pretty much after those songs were done, ready to go record. So he left for a year, so that slowed us down. When he came back and we got the songs rehearsed again, we went in, and thankfully, Chuck was still on our side, and we did the drum track, believe it or not, in December of 2010. So, really, through all of 2011, through our schedules and everything, we recorded that record pretty much all year long. And then we've been putting all the artwork and everything together for the last few months, and finally it's going to come out. So It's been a year and a half process.
Has it been compounded by the fact that, you know, you guys, you're a great band, you get a lot of notice, but what a lot of people don't know is, you know, bands, you know, you guys are millionaires. You all have, you know, day jobs. Has that hindered the process at all?
For sure. Definitely. Schedules, you know, I have a couple kids. So do the other guys in the band. So, you know, you're not able to to, you know, schedules conflict, you know, for sure. And, you hit it on the head, you know, working day jobs, having kids, and just trying to make ends meet while having a band, it's a lot. And I'm really surprised Chuck stuck through it on this one with us, because we've been hard on him for sure. But I think it'll be worth the wait, definitely. I'm excited for it to come out.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get a sneak preview of it. Chuck sent me it.
Did he got you one?
Very cool. He sent me the digital. I'm going to buy a vinyl. Are you guys going to release it on vinyl?
Yes, it's going to be on vinyl. Actually, just picked out the colors. We're going to do a beer splatter limited vinyl pressing, and it's going to have a bonus track on it. We kind of took two Black Sabbath songs and did them our way, fused them together. So that'll be the bonus track, and then it'll have a beer splattered wax. So it'll be cool.
Nice. Yeah, I'm definitely going to pick up one of those. Now, Danny, you have a new album forthcoming on Basement Records. You've received and achieved, really, a lot of critical success. You're a very successful band. How does it feel to have your honesty and musical talent to be validated like that?
And it feels cool, you know. Just going back to starting out, you know, in a band, you have all these, you know, things, little milestones that would be cool, like, you know, play open for TSOL or have a reviewer say your record's good, or, you know, and to kind of slowly walk up the steps and, you know, knock one off, it's definitely very cool.
Now, like you said, you this kind of segues into my next question. Is there any tour news from Killing California? I mean, the fact that you guys have kids and everything, it's got to be difficult just to get out for a weekend warrior tour. But do you guys have any, any shows you're going to be playing soon, or any kind of tour news?
We're playing with Zeke, actually, which is a huge thing for me and the other guys in the band, at Alex's Bar in Long Beach next month. So that's definitely a band bucket list, to be such fans of them and then to get to open for them. And then there's a tour talk in June or July. I don't want to mention the band's name. It's a great band, but it's kind of premature to talk about. So hopefully that happens. But there is definitely things in the work. But right now we're really focused on getting the record out, getting a little steam behind that, and then I think the second half of the year we'll definitely be doing some touring. We're able to do it. We just have to plan ahead, you know, because of, you know, our other lives as fathers and such.
Right, right. And it's got to be difficult. I mean, you guys have to plan the tour around, you know, school and kids' activities.
Yeah, not very on rock and roll, is it?
Well, I mean, it just goes to show that you guys love what you do, that you're, you're still making such great music, even though you have a family, that, you know, you put your family's definitely first, but, you know, it shows in your music that you have a real heartfelt honesty and, you know, you love what you do as well as love who you are.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
Now, Dan, it's been a real pleasure getting to know you over this hour. I'm a huge Killing California fan. I've introduced a lot of people to the band. But for everyone else that is listening, and we have right now about 11,000 listeners, where can we find Killing California online, first off? Where can we find Basement Records? And most importantly, I want to give you a chance to give any shout-outs you'd like to. Talk about your kids, anything you want. The floor is yours.
You can find us on Facebook. I guess where I'd start first, Facebook.com / Killing California, BasementRecords.com. We have a MySpace page / Killing California. And, you know, real shout outs would go to Chuck Dietrich, owner of Basement, for putting up with us. And, you know, anyone who's into the band, thank you. Thank you, Frank. That's it. I don't have a laundry list of people I really need to thank. That's it, really.
Well, if you want to say hi to your kids, you can, because this is going to go into a loop in a podcast.
My kid's actually right here yelling at me. What do you want? Hey, thanks, Conan. Here. So,
Danny,
yeah, so I got the kids out of the way. But yeah, Frank, thanks a lot, man, for having me. We'll get you one of those vinyl copies when they come out.
I appreciate it. Now, Danny, I want to finish off tonight with by far my favorite Killing California song, The Spartan. Can you tell me a little bit about it before we play it?
That's about my dad. Plain and simple. He's a weird old dude. So yeah, the song's about him all the way. If you listen to the lyrics, you get a good impression of my old man.
Yeah,
but
this song.
He's a badass. He's just trippy.
Yeah, this song is by far. I mean, this song blows me away with its honesty and just the lyrics. And you know, it knowing that it's about your dad, it definitely explains the song quite well.
Cool.
Okay, well, Danny, thanks so much for coming on, and we're going to finish off tonight with the Spartan, and I look forward to hearing a lot more from you guys.
All right, thanks a lot, Frank. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Danny.
Right. Bye-bye.
Guys, we're going to finish off tonight with the Spartan. Tomorrow, or next Monday, we're going to have Tim from Timmy B. from Stabbing Back. Thanks for listening tonight. This is Killing California with the Spartan. You can find Killing California at basementrecords.com. Basement Records also has a Facebook page. Killing California has a Facebook page. So I encourage you guys to go look them up. This is Killing California with the Spartan.